You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. It is The Bigger Picture and I'm Mira Sifasodi. Just last month in the UK, experts are urging people in their 60s to be routinely screened for the early stages of Alzheimer's disease. And that's exactly what we're talking about today. Diagnosis of Alzheimer's with Jessica Price, an expert in cognitive neuroscience. Welcome to the show, Jessica.
Thank you for having me.
Jessica, the National Health Service in the UK mm-hmm. has not so far offered screening because the Department of Health does not believe that screening tests are yet effective enough. Now, what's your take on this?
I think a large reason is why they're reluctant to offer screening tests is that they might give a diagnosis and the person might actually not have Alzheimer's. They might have what's termed as mild cognitive impairment, which in some cases just it's not Alzheimer's, but they kind of could convert to Alzheimer's later. So they could be given people diagnosis, but they don't have Alzheimer's just yet, or they might not convert to Alzheimer's. So you're giving people a label, but what do they do with it? Mm-hmm. So it could be quite distressing for both the patient and the family involved if they get given a diagnosis that turns out not to be correct.
Okay.
And it also can be quite expensive because you need to go through a kind of routine series of tests. So I think the NHS might be slightly reluctant because it would be an added expense, and the screening tests, some of them aren't sensitive enough in order to get an accurate diagnosis that could be very expensive and very distressing. But it also could pick up people in the early stages, and it's better to get the diagnosis as early as you can because it leads to a kind of better quality of life mm-hmm. for the patient and for the family involved because they can kind of get the support network up and going, that kind of thing.
Okay, so. But when you say early diagnosis, how early are you talking about?
It's really hard with Alzheimer's to actually get an accurate diagnosis because a lot of people just think, oh, my memory's getting bad. It's just I'm getting older. I'm getting more forgetful. But some people can kind of mask the fact that they're having problems and don't want to admit it. And when the memory problems become more evident, that's the kind of glaring sign that something's seriously wrong. But there's other factors there, problems with attention, kind of subtle behaviour, personality changes that have been going on for quite a while, but it's only when the memory problems become quite a big problem that they realise something's wrong. And at that point, they could actually be kind of more in the kind of moderate stages rather than the early stages. So as soon as people can pick it up, it's best, but a lot of it doesn't get picked up because people cover the fact they're having problems.
Mm-hmm. How do you pick it up, Jessica? Bad memory, if memory is just an indication, mm-hmm. I have a bad memory.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When do alarm bells go off as mm-hmm. far as memory is concerned?
I think if you have problems, you forget to eat, you make appointments, you don't turn up for someone who is normally very good at remembering appointments, birthdays, they start to forget people's names. And people can get quite agitated. So they know something's wrong and they get quite upset mm-hmm. that they can't remember things as well as they used to.
Okay.
So, and people can get quite aggressive, and someone who could be quite mild-mannered to start with can suddenly have severe mood swings. And that's a good indication that something's maybe not right.
Okay. You just described me minus the aggressiveness and the mood swings.
I have to admit I have quite a bad memory myself.
But the key point here is you mentioned a change, mm-hmm. as in this has been the case with me mm-hmm. all the time. But if you have had a good memory and then you mm-hmm. find it, you know, deteriorating, then that could be a sign.
Yes.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's a slight difference. Mm-hmm. Now, we understand that doctors use a variety of assessments and laboratory measurements to mm-hmm. make what we call a differential diagnosis. Could you tell us more about this?
Yes. Well, most people know when you think of dementia, you automatically think Alzheimer's. But there are actually various other different types of dementias. There's vascular dementia, and that tends to be if people have suffered a stroke or had maybe a heart attack, and that can lead to hardening the arteries, and that can also lead to a type of dementia, which is very similar symptoms in the early stages to Alzheimer's. So when people are looking for a diagnosis, first step is to kind of rule out other possible dementias or other possible health causes. Depression can mask symptoms because some of the symptoms in the early stages can be quite similar to Alzheimer's. So ruling out other possible causes could be a vitamin B12 deficiency because that can also affect mental processing. So usually in the early stages, it's a case of we're going to rule out various other possible causes. and then see, we ruled out everything out, this is what's left. Mm-hmm. And that can help aid the diagnosis of, yes, it's Alzheimer's, or no, it's vascular dementia, or it could be something like Lewy body. Dementia is also frontotemporal dementia, but the most common type of dementia is Alzheimer's. Then it's kind of vascular Lewy bodies, and that accounts for roughly about 90% of the people with dementia.
Okay, yeah. 90% are Alzheimer's.
But Alzheimer's, vascular, and Lewy bodies, okay, they account for.
They make up 90%. Yeah. And of the three, Alzheimer's would be the most common?
Yes, but there is kind of more recent research that shows that it's actually quite difficult to find someone with the kind of pure Alzheimer's type, because with, as you get older, there's a large increase in people with cardiovascular problems. So there is kind of a mixed cases where they have Alzheimer's, the kind of leading cause of their dementia, but they do have some other vascular factors. So just because you have Alzheimer's doesn't mean you don't have the other types of dementia. So you might have a kind of mixed pathology, and it's harder to treat certain types of dementia. Alzheimer's, if you have a kind of large, it's larger contributing factor, then you would just treat the person as if they had pure Alzheimer's.
Mm, okay. That sounds pretty difficult to diagnose if you have mixed sort of dementia.
Yes, it can be quite tricky, and people are looking to actually do research to kind of fully tease it apart to see how easy it is to differentiate between the two, because that can lead to completely different treatment plans.
Okay. Does it take a whole team to make a diagnosis of Alzheimer's?
Yes. Usually, I'll talk about the situation in the UK, you can get initially have an appointment with your local doctor, and they might refer you to a local memory clinic, and generally you'd have an appointment with a clinical psychiatrist, and they would take the patient's medical history, and there'd be a family report, probably have a blood test to rule out kind of vitamin B12 deficiency, folic acid, other possible hormone related problems. Some cases you'd have MRI scan, and that would be to see if it's maybe vascular factors, or also look at kind of grey matter volume loss to see if that picks up, and that can be a good indication of, yes, there's something wrong.
Okay, but so it should be a combination of
Yes.
Everything, medical history, physical mm-hmm. examination, neuropsychological testing, mm-hmm. brain imaging scans. Yeah. Now, brain imaging techniques are said to identify preclinical neural changes that predict mm-hmm. subsequent Alzheimer's. Yeah. What are these neural changes?
I mentioned a little bit, just a few seconds, about grey matter loss. There's recent research using positron emission tomography, using Pittsburgh compound B, and people would be injected with the compound, and they look at the kind of uptake within the brain.
Is it a dye?
It's a dye, okay. Yeah. And they look at the uptake in the brain, and there's kind of less uptake in Alzheimer's patients, but there's also evidence of greater grey volume loss that's not just due to kind of normal healthy controls. They have a kind of higher uptake of the compound and less grey matter loss. So they can compare to kind of healthy controls, and people, I think, with a possible diagnosis of Alzheimer's, you can kind of compare to see if actually there is evidence there that something is not quite right.
Mm-hmm. Is this quite common?
Not routine, because right. it's quite expensive. And for the kind of local GP or for the local hospital, it's not routine, because they might not actually have the equipment to do that. MRIs tend to be done much more routinely, but there's also the kind of added cost and the added time. If people haven't been picked up in the early stages, then it's slightly easier if in their kind of more moderate stages of Alzheimer's, and then there's kind of less need to have the brain imaging scans, because it's kind of more obvious in their behaviour and their medical history. So you sometimes don't really need to have the scan, because it's kind of obvious already that they have the disease.
Okay. Just with the medical history and, mm-hmm. you know, the other sort of tests. Mm-hmm. Coming up, we'll find out more about the diagnosis of Alzheimer's on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
You're listening to BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Good afternoon. This is The Bigger Picture, and I'm Mira Sivasodhi. Jessica Price, an expert in cognitive neuroscience, in the studio with us. We're discussing the diagnosis of Alzheimer's, which seems to be quite a chore for doctors these days, Jessica. Now, I understand that you can also use biomarkers, such mm-hmm. as, you know, blood tests or spinal fluid, that could be an indicator. Mm-hmm. Could you tell us more about that?
With the spinal fluid tests, people have a spinal tap, and they take, I think it's about 10 mils of spinal fluid.
This is like a lumbar puncture?
Yeah, like a lumbar puncture. Right. And they measure what they call the tau protein levels, because that can be an indication of whether people are actually, they may have Alzheimer's. It's a good kind of indication factor. but they're also with normal aging, they can actually have quite high tau levels but not have any signs of Alzheimer's or other types of dementia. So there's been a lot of recent research to see if there's different kind of ways of analysing CFS tests to see if it can actually improve the diagnosis. And that's quite a promising area. There's been quite a few recent studies also looking to see if you can actually pick up diagnosis of Alzheimer's using blood tests, looking at the kind of protein levels in the blood as well. But I think that's still a lot of work still ongoing. Looking at that, because there's quite a lot of recent research that has found slightly differing results, so it can be quite tricky to kind of compare studies and see if you can actually get the exact same results on a different population compared to a slightly different population across somewhere else in the world. So it's still very early stages of finding a definitive biomarker, and it would be good to find something that's quick, easy. CFS tests and blood tests, they're quite invasive, and some people aren't so willing to agree to do the test because they're just not keen on the idea of having a lumbar puncture when there could be other tests out there that would be less painful.
Yeah, a lumbar puncture isn't the most comfortable thing to do. No, not at all. And then also there's this so-called touch-sensitive computer screen that, you know, takes about just 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. It is non-invasive, it's quick, and it's easy for screening. In fact, it's just in a GP surgery for the very early stages of Alzheimer's diseases, those who are over 65. Would you know much about this?
The results from actually that study are quite promising. One of the standard examinations that you give people that might have either mild cognitive impairment, Alzheimer's or other types of dementia is the mini mental states examination. It's a standard tool that you use to diagnose possible memory disorders, but it's not very sensitive. You can have people who are quite high functioning that score quite highly, but yet in their personal history, there's something really not right. Mm-hmm. So the development of the Kantan-Powell test is something that's quite promising because it also taps into memory, attention. So it's a short test, but it's a kind of barrage of different attention, language. It taps into quite a lot of different capabilities. Mm-hmm. So it's quite promising, and it's something that's quick and easy. I think it'd be something that local doctors would be quite willing to use because it's something that could pick up something and they can refer the patient to a local memory clinic. So it's something that sounds quite promising.
Okay. Speaking about screening, can you predict memory decline?
Ooh, that's a tricky question. Well, it's generally known that as you get older, your memory does decline. So you find it difficult to remember names. You go into rooms and think, I can't remember why I'm here. So generally, as you get older, your memory will start to get a bit worse, which is worrying for me because I have quite a bad memory to start with. Mm-hmm. But there are people who are in their 80s that are still sharp as anything, and they put me to shame.
Exactly.
So
what is it? What are they doing so right that we're not?
Well, I think it's recommended to generally eat healthily and keep mentally active, just to kind of engage yourself in activities, try to take vitamin B12 supplements, just generally keep active. There's no one thing you can do that might help stop your memory getting worse.
It's no guarantee.
No guarantee, unfortunately. It's just to maybe do crosswords, go for walks and things like that, have a healthy diet. There's no one thing that can stave off memory problems, but it's a good idea to keep yourself healthy and active.
Mm, okay. Individuals with mild Alzheimer's disease often demonstrate increased functional activation during cognitive task performance relative to healthy controls. Could you elaborate?
Well, some of my own research was with EEG, electroencephalogram, and we got people to do a memory test that involves seeing a series of pictures and spoken words paired together. So they see a picture of a train and hear the word tunnel. And their task was simply to say, I've seen that before, or no, that's the first time I've ever seen it. And we measured EEG while they were performing the task.
EEG meaning the
electroencephalogram. Mm-hmm. And there was kind of greater activation for people. We recruited people that had a definite diagnosis of Alzheimer's already through our clinical collaborators. And they had kind of more spread out activation compared to healthy controls. So the healthy controls saw the more kind of pattern where you'd pick up the kind of memory effects with the EEG, which was much more focused, whereas with Alzheimer's, it was much more spread out. So it seems that they incorporate a lot more brain areas, but it's still not effective. So it's kind of much more dispersed. Mm-hmm. So they're not so effective.
Yeah. You're working on a project here in Malaysia. You've just landed on our shores, what, mm-hmm. 2 weeks ago? And you're going to be doing some sort of research here for Alzheimer's patients. It's going to be an extension of the research that you were doing in the UK. Could you tell us more? How are you going to get the Malaysians involved?
Yes. Well, this is work that I did at the University of Glasgow with my collaborators, Dr. Kerry Kilbourn, Professor Bernard Conway from the University of Strathclyde, and my colleague Zoe Tigres. The task that we have at the moment won't translate well in Malaysia because some of the pictures we have might be quite particular to UK. So I need to have a careful think with my collaborators of identifying pictures that will work both with people in the UK and people in Malaysia, and then kind of build up clinical laboratories in here in Malaysia and have their input to see what would actually work here, which would work fine in the UK but not work here. So looking at cross-cultural differences and see if we can improve the task and help improve the diagnosis here in Malaysia as well.
Mm-hmm. Using pictures and words?
Yes, I think start off with pictures because they can be a lot more universal compared to words. So one aspect is I need to try and learn some Malay.
Which shouldn't be difficult.
Yes, yeah. Hopefully.
You know, Jessica, to me it's such a wide area, this mm-hmm. whole thing of diagnosing Alzheimer's. You've got, as you mentioned, mixed dementia, a whole lot of other things which could sort of blur the lines
yes.
as far as Alzheimer's is mm-hmm. concerned. Now, it's a shock and shame to find out that in the UK, money for Alzheimer's research is just 3% of that which goes to fund cancer cures. Now, perhaps is that why we know of more people who have survived brain tumors, but no one has sort of beaten Alzheimer's? Is that one of the reasons? Or would you say there is a lot of research going into it, but it's just a very, very complex condition mm-hmm. to work on?
I think the spotlight on getting cancer treatments and research into cancer has been such a big funding draw, but there's been a recent spotlight on actually improving Alzheimer's diagnosis, and it's because we're an ageing population, there's been much greater emphasis on actually looking at ways of improving the diagnosis and developing treatments. Because the treatments currently available at the moment, they can't cure Alzheimer's, it's not a curable disease, but there's ways of kind of stabilising so that it stops the decline from becoming much more rapid. So it's a way of just keeping people stable.
Controlling it,
but there's no
cure.
No cure, and I don't think there will be one for at least 5 to 10 years. There might be more approved drug treatments that can stop the progression a lot more effectively, but the idea of a cure happening anytime soon, I would be very impressed, but very surprised if that happened.
Mm-hmm. What exactly goes on? I know as far as Parkinson's is concerned, you are lacking the hormone called
Dopamine.
Mm-hmm. In Alzheimer's, what's actually happening to the brain?
Mm-hmm. In Alzheimer's, it's the debilitating disease, so it's a kind of slow progression where you lose synapses, become less effective, so the neurons aren't firing as effectively. And there's a build-up of proteins in the brain, plaques, and
as a result of these neurons not firing?
Yes. So there's a kind of build-up of plaque in the brain that makes the brain not work as effectively. It's slowly progressive, so people can have a diagnosis of Alzheimer's in their kind of early 60s, but live until they're 80, 90, but the person that they once were is completely gone. So if you get a diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease, it's not fatal. It will be something else that the person will ultimately die of. So it's not a terminal disease, but you lose all aspects of your personality. You fail to start recognising family members, and it can be quite distressing mm-hmm. to everyone involved, the person that for their spouse that they fell in love with, they maybe brought up children together, it's just gone.
Right.
And there's nothing they can do about it, really.
Right. So the medications aim to manage and control.
Yes.
What are the medications doing? Are they trying to stimulate these neurons to fire more? Or is it controlling the buildup of plaque in the brain? What is the medication doing?
I'm not entirely sure what the actual medication targets. I think a lot of it is to kind of stabilise, so kind of try and prevent the neurons from no longer firing. So I think I'm not entirely sure exactly how the drugs works mm-hmm. Completely, but I think it's generally to kind of stop the kind of build-up of the plaques and try and increase the neurons to fire, but I'm not entirely sure, so.
Okay. What are your hopes for future diagnosis?
My hopes for future diagnosis is it takes quite a long time for people to actually get a diagnosis. It can take 6 months to a year. So I'd like to cut that down. So at least people have a definite diagnosis. It might not be one they want, but some people feel relieved if they've actually been given a diagnosis because they're like, at last, I know what's wrong with me. So I'd like to cut down a lot of the uncertainty and a lot of the time so people at least have a diagnosis, or they might have the good news of, no, you've not got dementia, you're actually, it's just normal ageing. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people, the doctors refer to the kind of walking worried that come back repeatedly, but are actually fine. But it's always good for people to have, if they think, I think I have memory problems, it's kind of safer just to go to the doctor anyway, because it's better to get a diagnosis in as early as possible, because it just ends up with a kind of better quality of life.
Okay, I'll keep my fingers crossed, probably walking through those doctor's doors in about 10 years' time. Still in denial.
I think longer than 10 years, definitely.
Thank you for joining us. Jessica Price, an expert in cognitive neuroscience, talking to us about the diagnosis of Alzheimer's on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, The Business Station.